And we're back. So Dan Hunter, teeing up a new season of the Future Law Podcast.
Mike Madison, so good to be back here with you. We're back. Who knew? Another season, right? It's just extraordinary.
I mean, we've been doing this for 4 years now.
Depending on how you define it, we're probably up to season 26.
I think we're proper veterans now.
Well, if only we were more professional. If only it started to show through in the quality of the performances. Anyway, how are you?
I'm doing well. You've had big news. You've transitioned from Australia to the UK.
I have. And now this podcast is brought to you by King's College London, which is my new gig. So I am the executive dean of the Dixon Poon School of Law at King's College London. So moved literally halfway across the world in order to be with you and to have a slightly different geographical take on the issues around legal tech and legal innovation and what the future law looks like. So nice to be with you.
All big things. Pittsburgh remains the same. I can comfortably report, which is something I could have said, any time in the last 20 years.
It's thrilling that some things don't change. And you are the single still point in the moving universe of legal tech and legal innovation. Anyway, it's great. So we're following on an action-packed season, which was great because I got to come back, which was wonderful. I really appreciated that. We focused on a few things there. This is our new shtick, right? We sort of try to pick up on two big topics. So this time, or the last time that we were together, we were talking about the sorts of skills and dispositions that people need in order to be able to thrive in this area. And also we talked a little bit about some legal tech stuff. We sort of focused on startups. This season, we have a slightly different set of interests. You want to take us through that, Mike?
Sure. So area one, super interesting, sort of picking up on extending the interest in legal tech, we're going to talk about ALSPs, alternative legal services providers, small and large, independent and startup, and also established in large scale. This is a pretty big and interesting sector that deserves its own attention.
Yeah, for me, so like it's funny. I remember the first time I heard the term ALSP or alternative legal services provider, and I thought, what the hell is this thing? Like it was just, and it wasn't that long ago. And now everyone's like, oh my God, that's so old school. But we've kind of come a really long distance in a really short amount of time. I remember when they were called legal process outsourcers, right? Like, so the assumption was that the only game in town was kind of a managed services, legal ops kind of play that meant that you sent your work off to a lower cost jurisdiction, whether it was India or South Africa or Bangladesh or the Philippines or whatever, right?
Or West Virginia.
There's an interesting story to be said around that, and I know you've kind of talked about that a bit. But now ALSPs are a lot bigger, a lot kind of more variegated than they were before. I mean, what's your view around ALSPs, and what can we expect to hear?
Well, I think you're going to have a couple of different stories sort of competing with one another. I think in one respect, you've still got a lot of independence, a lot of legal tech startups that are marketing different flavors of support and services for legal operations, kind of a continuation of that story. And at the same time, you have some heavy hitters, some of the established law firms and some large scale, the big four firms, sort of moving ever more aggressively into this space. So you've got a lot more activity and development, both at kind of the top end of the classic legal profession, as they see this as a market opportunity, and also continuing sort of bubbling from below with a lot of small firms leveraging or arbitraging cost of labor in different parts of the world, trying to get in on a specific sector of legal services and try to compete on cost.
Yeah, so for me, the sort of the maturity of the sector is maybe the most interesting kind of aspect. So when I first became aware of this segment of the marketplace, they all kind of looked the same. They all kind of looked like Elevate, Exigent, or Lawyers on Demand, Axiom. They were all sort of kind of doing the same kind of thing. It started out as kind of managed services. And probably a little bit of staffing kind of stuff, secondments, but mostly there was sort of this idea of we were going to outsource discovery to these places. We were going to outsource the low value, low risk, but high volume stuff to these people. And one of the things I've really kind of discovered as we've discussed this topic and we started to interview some people, but as I've talked to them, it's like really interesting that as the market has matured, it's segmented quite a lot, right? So now, you know, you have a situation where people call themselves ALSPs, but really what they're doing is legal staffing, right? Like flexible legal staffing. That will be technologically mediated. That'll be, you know, like worked through in relation to that. But it's still, you know, mostly staffing, which comes out of a kind of a big law model of, you know, our clients really want our best attorneys to go and work with them. You know, they're going to keep giving us some work as long as we send them some good people. So here they are. And that was sort of where that model came from. But that's not the same thing as a managed services business, right? But very different. Like legal staffing is very different from managed services, which is very different from kind of legal innovation. So we're starting to see this segmentation that different players are performing different functions in the marketplace. And one of the best examples of that, which we'll talk about through a couple of interviews that I've done and some ones that you've done as well. But you know, if you think about Axiom, one of these big players a few years ago, they did everything, right? Then they got split up into different chunks. And so when I first talked to the people at Axiom and said, oh, you know, you're ALSPs, and they went, well, yeah, absolutely. But we're, you know, we do staffing, right, of a certain sort. And then I went, well, hang on, wait, didn't you used to do innovation? I went, oh, that's Factor now, right? It's a wholly different business, different company. We don't talk to them anymore. So that's kind of interesting, you know, a very different kind of a model than we had a few years ago. So that's one of the really big differences around ALSPs that I've noticed. What have you noticed in the groups that you've talked to?
Well, I think automation is still a big deal. So separate from the human capital, I think there's still a lot of pressure to expand the domains where automation is both feasible and economical. Uh-huh. I think in sort of the negotiation between corporate law departments and outside law firms, and so who's going to do what and how both can you know, hold on to their respective interests in efficiency and profits and service. I think the law firms, so there was a prediction, you know, 15, 20 years ago that the private law firm world was ripe for disruption, right? That Clayton Christensen disruptive innovation metaphor, which is always swirling around innovation in tech markets. And here we are 15, 20 years later, and there's an awful lot of big law firms that are still around and still thriving, not exactly in the same forms that they were in before. A lot of them have moved into the spaces that are also occupied by ALSPs. But for the law firm market, it's not so much a matter of staffing. It's really a matter of picking up efficiencies in the area of automating sort of large scale repeat play types of transactions or types of matters. So I think that's a really interesting thing to watch, is how the sort of the incumbent players in the legal industry have adapted in different ways by sort of starting to colonize some of the territory that the ALSPs originally kind of pioneered.
Yeah, I love that. I love that observation, because so it plays to both, two things that I'm kind of thinking of. So one is an anecdote, and another thing is something that we're going to explore in this season. So anecdote, a good friend of mine, probably my oldest friend in law, we did computer science and law together at different universities. We graduated at the same time. We worked together in both of our first jobs in law many, many, many years ago. He was a managing partner of one of the big Australian law firms. And I pitched to him the idea of ALSPs. And that particular law firm has and had at the time a big legal staffing play. That was one of their big things that they'd kind of created as a startup off to the side. And I said, oh, you know, you could take that and you could turn it into all of these other things. You know, you could do all of these other ALSP managed services. You could do innovation. You could do all sorts of stuff. AI, you know, think about this. And he said, yeah, but we just make so much money from staffing. it's taking all of our effort to sort of like shovel the money into the bank. You know, we don't have time to think about that kind of stuff. So it's kind of funny to see how different places end up with you know, different kind of emphases. But one of the things, the second thing I wanted to note, and I don't know if you have a view about this, Mike, but so many law firms have started to realize that ALSPs are exactly their business, just with a slightly different cast. And so they're creating captive ALSPs. And, you know, I would have to say over the last, you know, maybe 2 years, the number of high-end white shoe firms that have said, you know what, actually, we really like the money that ALSPs can bring, and we're not actually going to outsource that. We actually want to bring that in-house. So many of them now have captive ALSPs, and I know that you've interviewed some of those, and we'll have some interviews around that kind of thing coming up as well.
Yeah, I have, and I'm really looking forward to getting those episodes out on the show later this season. I think part of what's going on is just to echo what you just said, there's sort of a competitive necessity to it, in the sense that, you know, mid-level partners on up in law firms, they've got a business model. They've got a business model for themselves, they've got a business model for the organization, and they're going to move assets around and adapt strategies to make sure that they make the money that they want to make and continue to serve clients, but to stay in business. There's also a side of this that actually, back when I was still a practicing lawyer in Silicon Valley back in the 1990s, that you started to see back then, the business lawyers in particular at the law firms, you could tell that they had a little bit of envy of their entrepreneurial clients. They kind of wanted to get in the game. They wanted to get off the sidelines. Yeah. And I think that there's a little bit of that going on in some of these law firms cultivating their own in-house or captive ALSPs. It's kind of a safe space in a sense. Yes, it's a business necessity, but it's also a way to maintain the business and the status of being a law firm partner, but have kind of an entrepreneurial hustle, not exactly on the side, but kind of part of their world.
Yeah. So one of the most interesting things about that, I totally agree, where it's like, oh, you know, we're really much cooler than, you know, you thought we were. You know, come and work for us. You know, we're all about technology. I'm like, well, you really better anyway. But the interesting thing for me that sort of cuts in two different directions, it's kind of a tension with each other, is the fact when you talk to these firms and the partners, they kind of like the fact that these ALSPs, these captive firms that they have a different business model, right? It has a different business cycle. Procurement works in a different way. The money comes in slightly differently. And they're like, that's great, because what it does is it de-risks the business, right? Like they're no longer just eating what they kill. They've got maybe a subscription type of model or something like that, which tends to be a little bit more stable in terms of revenue. But at the same time, you know, they find it really hard to get the margins that they get as lawyers. Like the thing about white shoe firms is they just make a ton of money, and ALSPs are often the second best solution, not because they're not a great solution, but just because the alternative is making lots and lots and lots of money. And I think the firms kind of struggle with that. So
you've got peaks and valleys in the classic firm, yeah, right? And so how do you smooth that out?
But the peaks are pretty high, right?
Yeah, but we can carry on that. But I want to make sure we shift our focus a little bit to the other theme that we're going to talk about this fall, which is something that, I mean, you and I were academics, we're sort of prone to this, but we've kind of pushed it off to the side a bit the first few seasons of the podcast. There's some big picture themes out there about the future of law and technology and sort of system level, structural level stuff that are connected to practice of law, building careers, running autonomous service organizations, but it has its kind of its own set of stories and implications. And so I think we're going to talk to some really, really interesting people, some very provocative big thinkers about what does this all add up to? What's going on right now? What are the kind of tectonic shifts that we're looking at or looking for? And you know, trying to bring some of that down to the day-to-day. Like, what does that mean, you know, if you're managing a firm or if you're building a career or if you're, you know, presiding over a court system, whatever your role might be. So I'm really looking forward to some of those conversations as well.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this, you know, and you know, you can tell that I'm a pointy-headed academic, right? Where it's just like, well, you know, stop telling me about the concrete stuff. Tell me about the higher level sort of systemic changes. Tell me about the structural differences that we can expect. You know, this podcast is called the Future Law Podcast. We were pretty clear about what we were interested in, and I, you know, I do think it's the right time for us now, having interviewed so many people and heard from so many really interesting viewpoints, to sort of say, all right, well, you know, is there a way of thinking this through? And actually, you know, even as I say that, it's like, well, there's not one way of thinking this through. There are lots of ways of thinking this through. But you know, I do think that there are changes. You know, the ALSPs as an example, as I said, you know, a few years ago, I had never even heard of the term, right? And my business in graduating lawyers is to actually understand what this means. And, you know, and I'm sure that there are lots and lots of law school deans out there that have never heard the term ALSP, who've never heard the term contract lifecycle maintenance, have no idea around this kind of stuff. So I think it's really valuable for us to kind of take these concrete examples and to say, all right, well, what does this mean? So some of the people that I've been talking to, you know, have been thinking about, well, what does this mean for, you know, your traditional law firm, for the city law firm here in the City of London? You know, how can you build a resilient organization that can respond to the sorts of changes that are going on here? Do we need to? What does it mean to respond to this? You know, how do we deal with the new group of graduates coming through who are they still millennials? I think they maybe.
I think we're past millennials at this point.
What are they? Yeah, like you know, I think we've had generations anyway. But you know, like, well, how do we respond to that? And then on the back of the pandemic, of course, we've got, you know, a completely different way of doing work, right? Remote working now doesn't seem strange. But what does that mean? You know, it really in concrete terms around, well, I want to, you know, be on a beach in Bali and phoning in, you know, my work, you know, well, can I do that? And how do we actually manage that? So it really is clearly a period of profound change, just very, very dramatic change. And what we're going to be talking about is what does that mean for the entire profession and the practice of law?
Yeah. And not only for the private law firms or the private sector. So this obviously extends to government sector, public sector, you know, administrative agencies and court systems, right? So if everything is remote or substantial numbers of things are remote, and also a lot of processes can be automated, how does that affect in positive and negative ways, you know, the roles that courts perform and how judges do their jobs? And, you know, think I'd scale it all the way up to things like, you know, what is the state of the rule of law in a, you know, technologically accelerated a legal profession? Because, you know, those are the questions that I'm talking about with my students. You know, they're graduating and moving out into a world where they're going to, where they work from home, but they still want to have big impacts on, you know, the shape of their communities. And so how does that look?
That's what I love about you, Mike. You always ask the small questions, right? It's just
yeah. Well, why not? There's only so much time. Might as well get everything out there on the.
I was going to say you may as well throw those grenades in there and see where they land. Yeah, I have to say, like, you know, I've often worried about the fact that it's two academics pointy headedly talking about these kind of things. But the one thing that we do have going for us is not that, you know, we're not connected to the profession or to the practice of law, but that we're actually dealing with students who, the day that they enter your law school or mine, they're still 3 years away from graduating and starting their careers, right? So, you know, we need to be thinking at least 3 years and probably 30 years in advance to sort of say, all right, well, these are the things we kind of think ethically we should be giving you, which is really the second topic of conversation that we're going to be talking about in this particular season.
Yeah, and we won't exhaust the inventory of questions by any means.
We'll have plenty of time to dig into that over the course of the next season. We hope that everyone listening is going to enjoy it. Did you have any particular highlights you wanted to kind of pull out at this particular point?
I don't want to give anything away, but too much. But I've gotten super excited by, you know, I'm always excited about everybody I've talked to. But there's a handful of people on my list, people I've talked to or I'm planning to talk to, who will just blow us away in terms of the, you know, the experience that they bring, the perspective that they bring, you know, the information that they share. I mean, every season of this podcast that we've done, I've been more and more inspired by, you know, the wisdom that we're able to elicit from the guests we have on the podcast. And it's really been, it's onward and upward for the coming season. So I'm really hoping that everybody listening will stick with us.
I can tell people at home that it's onward and upward because at least one guest is one degree of separation away from President Obama, but I don't want to give too much away. In our next episode, have we given thought to who is going to be up next?
I think we've got a number of interviews in the queue, but I don't know that we've sorted out exactly how we're going to launch the series. So this will be a surprise.
This is even more exciting. I mean, either how our producer will edit this particular bit out, and we will have a voiceover explaining who is coming up next, or you can join us next time when we will be talking to someone very interesting, either about alternative legal service providers or about what are the systematic and structural changes that are going on in the legal profession and legal practice. Mike Madison, as always, a pleasure just to be chatting to you again today.
And I feel like we're so much closer together now that you're in London.
I feel it too. It's only one ocean, not sort of oceans anymore, which is great. Look after yourself, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.